Welcome here to the Next Gen Voter, the only podcast of the Next Gen, by the Next Gen, and for the Next Gen. We are back with a podcast after 3 long years. We've been very active on social media, but with a presidential election less than 3 weeks away, I figured it was time to come back on the air with a podcast breaking down what you need to look for on election night as we get set to determine who the 47th president of the United States will be. And I think as I want to make this the most productive half hour possible, we should start right away with Pennsylvania, because there is very little chance that the winner of the presidency will not have Pennsylvania in their column. The math just isn't really there for either Kamala or Donald Trump to win the presidency without Pennsylvania. So the question then becomes, what do these candidates actually need in Pennsylvania? And I think we'll start with Donald Trump. He needs to run up the rural vote. He needs counties in the middle of Pennsylvania. He needs the counties outside of Pittsburgh, a little bit further outside of Philadelphia, to give him extraordinary numbers, numbers much closer to what he was getting, maybe even better than the numbers he was getting in 2016. He needs places like Butler County, where he had that fateful rally and then returned last week, to give him something like 40-45 point margins. Because if he doesn't get those there, he's going to have a real trouble responding to the problems that he's having in the suburbs. We look at the suburbs in Pennsylvania and a pattern emerges. Consistently, really since his surprise win in Pennsylvania in 2016, the suburbs have moved left, and they've moved left rapidly. Think of the collar counties, Montgomery, Bucks, Chester, Delaware. These are counties that were won by Hillary Clinton by 15 to 20 points, that were won by Joe Biden by almost 30 points. Won by Fetterman and Shapiro by north of 30 points in 2022. If Harris is getting close to those numbers, Donald Trump's path to winning Pennsylvania becomes a lot harder. If Harris can hit those numbers, she's got to feel good, because those counties, between the five of them, constitute almost a quarter of the state's vote. You add that to Philadelphia, that's more than a third of the vote in Pennsylvania, just in those counties. And you really start to see how, even if Trump racks up the rural vote, Harris can win Pennsylvania. But what she needs to do is not let the trends continue in Philadelphia. Philadelphia has started to slip away from the Democrats a little bit. It's still a very Democratic city. Biden won it by 64 points. Shapiro and Fetterman both won it by more than 60 points. But at the same time, you look at what Obama would do. 70 plus points. Hillary Clinton won it by 67. Harris probably needs to be closer to those numbers than the numbers we saw from Biden or Shapiro, especially if we think, as I do, that Trump's going to do better in the rural areas. And then lastly, I want to go back to it because I think it is so important and so indicative of how the night's going to go, and that is Erie County has voted for the correct winner of the presidency every year since 2000. So you're far top left of Pennsylvania, those of you looking at a map on election night, right on the lake. And, I mean, it's a fair bet. Erie and also Northampton counties have predicted the correct presidential winner in each election in the 21st century, so whoever wins Erie is in a good spot, not just because of that trend, but because Erie is really representative of the swing demographics. It's got a lot of working-class white voters, but at the same time, it's relatively well-educated. Those are the two demographics that are really crucial to this election and why Erie will be a very good indicator. But it might not help us on election night because Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, which we'll talk about in a little bit, are two states that don't allow the pre-recording of votes prior to Election Day. So they can't start tabulating votes until Election Day, which is why it is very likely, especially given the massive numbers of votes by mail we've already started seeing racked up in Pennsylvania, that we could see that red mirage again. The question is, will it be stronger this time, Trump's margin, and will it allow him to hold on where it couldn't in 2020? All right, we'll turn now to Michigan. I think one thing to look at is the Upper Peninsula. It has kind of been a little bit of a mystery. It moved rapidly right between 2012 and 2016, swinging almost 10 points in Donald Trump's direction compared to Mitt Romney, but then has moved back to the left both in 2020 and 2022, suggesting that maybe Trump's message isn't working as well there than it did maybe in 2016. But in the end, the Upper Peninsula is only about 5% of the vote in Michigan, so it's really unlikely to be decisive unless we're getting a margin within a point, which, albeit, is quite possible. What's much more likely to decide Michigan is the Detroit metro area. Detroit already at 19% of its total 2020 vote total, with almost 3 weeks still left of early voting and election day voting. So obviously a great sign if you're the Harris campaign, because the vast majority of the votes, in fact more than 80%, the exact number, is a Democratic margin in Detroit of 80% in 2020. It was even greater than that in Clinton. So you would imagine any extra votes you get in Detroit would be beneficial for the Harris campaign, and that's why they're really working on turning out the vote there. On the other side, for Trump, you want to look at Macomb County. It's his biggest winning county. He won it by 12 points in 2016, won it by 8 in 2020. He really needs to keep that trend from continuing. He needs to keep it around 8 points. If he lets that trend, that 4-point swing, continue, if it gets down to 5 or 4 points, it's just not going to net him enough raw votes out of that Kalamazoo area that he needs to contend when Harris is netting probably something around 10 to 15 points out of Oakland County and 10 points out of Kent, and starting to gnaw at Trump's margins in places like Ottawa, in Kalamazoo, in Saginaw. And I think what the last thing I'll say about Michigan before I move on and talk about yet another state up in the Midwest is look at the college towns. Look at Ann Arbor, look at East Lansing, look at even, like, the UMich Wayne and those cities outside of Detroit, places like Auburn Hills, because they will tell you if Harris is turning out the collegiate vote, which he's going to need not just in Detroit and in Michigan, but across the country. All right, Wisconsin is really interesting in that there are really three factors. You have the rurals, which for the Democrats are better in Wisconsin than pretty much anywhere else in the Midwest. They consistently win about a third of the vote in the rurals in Wisconsin, and that doesn't seem like it's going to change. If you look at it, there really aren't any counties other than like the two counties, Menominee and Florence, which have like a combined 5,000 people, that are won by more than like 40 points by any candidate in Wisconsin. So Trump's not able to rack up as much vote in the rurals there as he did in other states. Where he racks up the votes is the wow counties, Waukesha, Outamagi, and Winnebago. He has consistently done really well in there, but those counties are moving left, and they're moving left fast. Waukesha moved left by 6 points between 16 and 20. Outamagi moved left 3 points. Winnebago moved left 5. Trump needs to stop that trend. These are counties where he could really rack up votes, because they are very populous counties. They're 8, 3.5, and 3% respectively of the total vote in Wisconsin. So if he can get back to his 2016 numbers, he's going to do very well. But if he can't do that, the question is there enough outstanding vote in the rurals to really save him in Wisconsin, especially considering the absolute powerhouse for the Wisconsin Democrats that Dane County is? Dane County, the county of the capital of Wisconsin, Madison, where the University of Wisconsin is at, is just an absolute fortress. Democrats have won it by at least 45 points in every election since Obama's inaugural election in 2008. And in the 2020 election, they increased their margin by 5 points to a 52-point margin. And then in 2022, in the gubernatorial race, Tony Evers actually won that County by 55 points, which gives indications that the Democrats might be getting close to their maximum, but definitely did not reach it in 2020, which is probably not a great thought for the Republicans. And then, of course, the turnout in Milwaukee will be crucial. Milwaukee did get a little bit better margin-wise for Joe Biden in 2020 than it did for Clinton, but what it really benefited him was that the turnout increased by almost 20%. When you're having those big jumps in turnout in places that are giving you a 30-plus point margin, it's less about the margin and more about the turnout. And so for Harris, the goal in Milwaukee and really the goal in the cities throughout the Midwest is going to be turnout, turnout, turnout. All right, now we're going to look at a state that really has been a red herring for the Democrats and almost that elusive white swan for years since 2008, and that's North Carolina. North Carolina is a state that I think everyone expected to flip Democratic in 2020, but Trump did a really good job in North Carolina in 2020, campaigned really hard there, and was able to actually increase his margins in a lot of counties, which helped him significantly. North Carolina also has some issues just for me in predicting it, simply because Hurricane Helene went through there and really devastated the western half of that state, which is about a quarter of the population of North Carolina. And so I really hope that we see full turnout, but there is a realist part of me that says those areas will probably not turn out at the same level. And my question is fundamentally, how much of a drop-off is it? If it's a 5% drop-off, it's probably not enough to really have a large effect on the election, unless it's an election within 10,000 votes or so. But if we're talking 10, 15, maybe even 20% drop-off in turnout rate, now we're talking about something that is definitely going to influence the winner of the state of North Carolina. These are majority Trump counties outside of Greensboro, or outside of Asheville itself, which is a Biden plus 16 county. So Trump would lose more votes if those areas don't turn out. Then I think we have to look at the research triangle between Durham, Raleigh, and Charlotte. These are areas that are moving left relatively rapidly, but the Democrats have seemingly not found a way to consistently get the turnout they need. They really did a good job in 08 at getting the turnout in these cities, in Raleigh, in Durham, in Charlotte, for Obama. But since 08, they have not had the sort of turnout they needed in Mecklenburg, in Wake County, in Guilford. And as a result, they've come up a little bit short. So they need to increase the turnout there. And for the Republicans, the goal in North Carolina is, A, you want to get those turnouts in the rurals, but also look at the majority black counties along the Atlantic coastline, up by Cape Hatteras. These are places that are moving to the right rather rapidly. These are places with more traditionally conservative demographics, more evangelical African Americans, socially conservative. They might agree with the messaging that Trump is providing on issues, even if they don't necessarily agree with him as an individual. And so these are places where, if you're the Republicans, you want to start seeing higher turnout there, because it means voters there are starting to listen to your message and starting to even up those margins there, where you could then afford a little bit of loss in the suburbs, in Mecklenburg, in Wake. North Carolina, one thing to note is it'll probably be one of the quickest states to report. Once it comes in, I believe it comes in at 8 o'clock on election night, but North Carolina gets the vast majority of its vote in within about 2, 2.5 hours. However, those of you who were watching on election night in 2020 probably remember how the New York Times and their election needle froze North Carolina at about 12:30 a.m. The reason for that is North Carolina allows the receipt of mail-in ballots up to a week after the election. So if North Carolina is outside of like a point margin, you will know who won the state very quickly and likely before midnight on election night. But if it is a really tight race, it could take up to a week to decide who wins North Carolina. All right, now we'll look at Georgia, probably the biggest question mark in terms of states for me, because polling has been all over the place. And unlike, say, the Midwestern states, there has really not been much of a consistent bias in any direction in Georgian polls, which really has me wondering, will we see the exact margins we're seeing in the polls, which are pretty dead even in reality? Georgia, the fundamental thing that you're going to be looking at is the metro Atlanta area. It's got the majority of vote, almost 60% of the vote of the state of Georgia comes out of the metro Atlanta area. Fulton, Gwinnett, Cobb, DeKalb counties. These are places that are generally very Democratic and are moving left. But these are places that, even when Mitt Romney was running, only 12 years ago, were voting for Republicans. Cobb County was a place that voted for Hillary Clinton by 2 points in 2016, voted for Joe Biden by 14. Gwinnett voted for Clinton by 5.5, voted for Biden by 18. Trump has to stem that tide. If he can keep those margins where they were, or even lose a little bit of ground compared to 2020, he's going to be in fantastic shape in Georgia, because the rurals are continuing to move to the right, especially down in the Black Belt in southern Georgia, in Sanford Bishop's district, in that kind of Alabama, Georgia, Florida border there. And then metro Atlanta. We've seen time and time again that turnout is a major factor in the actual city proper. In 2018, the Democrats thought they had the votes to flip the governor's seat, but didn't quite get the turnout they needed in Atlanta. In 2020, they got the turnout they needed, and it was just enough. They won by 10,000 votes. It's very apparent, at least to me, that both candidates have the votes to win Georgia, if they get them to the polls. The question is, which candidate does a better job of getting their candidates, or getting their voters to the polls, especially because we've already seen really high turnout in the early vote in Georgia. Places with absolute records. Georgia broke its record by over 100,000 votes for votes on the first day of early voting, with a quarter million voters voting on the first day of early voting, which is just amazing. And so expect high turnout in Georgia, and the question is, where is it coming from? Arizona's a fun one to look at, because unlike most states, I can relatively confidently tell you that it is unlikely we're going to know who won Arizona on election night. We did in 2020, because Fox News was bold and made a call. I don't anticipate that happening again, simply because even though the call ended up being the correct call, it was probably not a good call to make, considering there was very clear opportunity for Donald Trump to come back mathematically and win that state, and they called it too early and got away with it. They're not going to do that again. Maricopa County has more than the majority of the votes in the state total. It has 61% of the state's vote. It is the definition of a swing county. Trump won it by 3 points in 2016. It was won by 1 point by Kyrsten Sinema in 2018. Joe Biden won it by 2 in 2020. Mark Kelly won it by 5 in 2022. Excuse me. But that really isn't a trend, because you look at that, those movements are really consistent with the statewide movement. Mark Kelly outran Biden by a couple points. Sinema outran Hillary Clinton. Biden outran Sinema, and so on. So the question then becomes, who wins Maricopa County? If you look at what is needed really from each candidate, it really comes down to Maricopa. Yeah, you would hope, if you're the Democrats, that you get a little bit more of the vote from Pima, where Tucson is, especially with all those college students at the University of Arizona. If you're Trump, you're looking at places like Pinal County along the border, or Mojave, where you did really well and started running up the score in 2020, especially compared to 2016. And you're saying, okay, can I improve by a point or two there? But In the end, I don't see anyone winning the state of Arizona without winning Maricopa County, and Arizona takes forever to count its votes. It is the absolute agony of any political commentator, any political analyst on election night, because you probably will take at least 5 days to get a full count for Maricopa County. And the real question is, because we've seen it time and time again, the trends are not consistent in what we see in reporting from Maricopa County. Some years we've seen a much redder later vote in reports than the initial vote. In other years, we've seen it shift to the left. So you really can't adequately make a call on what we're going to see from the mail-in votes as they're counted in Maricopa. And for that reason, you really kind of hope as an American, objectively, that it does not come down to Maricopa County and to the next state I'm going to talk about, which is Nevada. Because Nevada, another state that has a large portion of its vote coming via the mail, they offer automatic mail-in voting to anyone who wants it. And again, like Arizona, Nevada, a state with only really two counties that matter, and those are Clark and Washoe counties. Between the two of them, they have 87% of the vote statewide, so Trump will run up the margin everywhere else, but that's not going to be enough for him. The Democrats have won in Nevada with very little margin in the past. They won in 2016 by winning Clark County, which is Vegas, by 10 points, and Washoe by 1. And in 2020, they lost a point in Clark, gained 3 in Washoe, and the rurals didn't matter. They won't matter again. The rurals in Nevada have so few people, it's almost laughable. Pretty sure there are more people on the campus of Tufts University than there are in some of the counties in Nevada. But you look at Clark County, you look at Washoe, Trump knows he just needs to keep the trends he had in Clark in 2020, and it might be enough to win in the state. He did a point better despite losing Nevada by a full point worse. So if he can keep that trend up, he is likely to win the state. It is probably the state that I would guess Trump is most likely to flip of states that he did not win in 2016. He's much more likely to win Nevada than, say, a Minnesota or a Virginia or a New Hampshire, because it hasn't been trending left the way some of those other states have. And so it's definitely a state to watch, especially because there's also Senate races there. Senate races also in Pennsylvania, in Ohio, which we'll talk about a little bit, in Michigan, in Wisconsin, and in Arizona. So there are definitely Senate races in a lot of these battleground presidential states, which you can also pay attention to. And one state that I'm honestly shocked we're talking about as a Senate race is Nebraska. I don't know what happened. Deb Fischer is apparently hated because up until about 2 months ago, no one thought there was going to be anything resembling a competitive race in Nebraska. And all of a sudden, the independent, Dan Osborne, has been pretty much even with her in the polls for the last 2 months. Fischer did make a promise that she was only going to serve 2 terms. Decided to break that promise, run for re-election for a 3rd term, and it's seemingly hurting her significantly because for a state that Trump won by almost 20 points in 2020, Deb Fischer should not be in a close race. The other race in Nebraska is a runaway, but if Deb Fischer can't get a clean win, that's problematic for Trump for several reasons. A, because there are down-ballot races that the Republicans really want to win, but B, because Nebraska, like Maine, splits its electoral votes by congressional district, and there is one district that Joe Biden won by 8 points, Nebraska 2nd, that Trump's trying to win back, because if he can win that district, it closes off what would be the easiest path for Kamala Harris to 270, which is winning the blue wall states of Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. But Trump right now is down by about 10 to 12 points in the polls of Nebraska 2nd, probably because it's trending left, but also because he's running on a ticket with a candidate who is historically underperforming in Deb Fischer. And if that race were to stay close and potentially be a swing race, you could have a situation where an independent in Nebraska could decide the control of the United States Senate based on which party he decides to caucus with, and that would be a crazy situation. All right, let's talk about Texas. We talked about it in 2020. We were very optimistic that it would be a little bit closer than it was. I don't have that same optimism in terms of the political kind of excitement of Texas that I do this time. I don't think it's going to be uncallable. I think it's very likely that Trump will have Texas called for him on election night. The way that Texas would remain uncallable would be if the rurals, and especially the Latino-heavy areas in the Rio Grande Valley, start showing Clinton-esque numbers for Kamala Harris. These are places where Biden fell off spectacularly, sometimes by 30, 40 points compared to Hillary Clinton. If Harris can get back towards those Clinton numbers, she definitely will have the suburban numbers in places like Collin and Denton and Harris County, where if she gets the Clinton numbers in the Rio Grande, all of a sudden you're not calling Texas on election night. But the fact of the matter is, Trump is doing really well with those second-generation Latino voters who are not opposed to immigration as a concept and as a practice, but opposed to illegal immigration and really support his immigration policies. And because of that, they are enough of a force in Texas politics, representing about 15% of the overall statewide vote, that Trump really increasing his margins there is enough to offset the gains that Harris and Biden have made in the suburbs of Houston, Dallas, Austin, San Antonio, etc. So either Harris is going to have to somehow find another 10-point swing in the suburbs, which, though I think will eventually happen, probably will not happen now and probably take another 8 to 12 years. Or she's going to have to reverse the gains Trump has made in the Rio Grande Valley, because it looks like Trump has a pretty solid lockdown on the state of Texas. All right, let's look at Florida. Florida, if you'd asked me a month ago, was a safe Trump state. Then Milton came. Milton causes all sorts of chaos. I remember 2012 very well and how Hurricane Sandy changed the election because it portrayed Obama as this bipartisan, charismatic, caring about all Americans figure. I don't think we've necessarily seen that from Harris in response to Milton, but what we have seen is kind of chaos all around. And when you add extra variables to an election, it becomes harder to predict. Milton did take out some of the more conservative, Republican-heavy areas of Florida. So there is a theoretical possibility where Trump could lose net votes in those areas simply because there's less turnout, like we talked about in the western North Carolina regions after the effects of Helene. The other thing to watch in Florida is Latino votes. If Trump can hit his 2020 numbers with Latinos, it's over. It doesn't really matter what happens elsewhere in Florida. If he hits those numbers, he will win the state and he'll win it comfortably. But if he can't, if Harris starts getting back towards Hillary Clinton numbers in Miami-Dade County, in Broward County, the suburbs in Florida have been moving left, especially in Hillsborough and Pinellas, that Metro Tampa St. Pete area. If those places keep the trend they've been on and Harris is able to recoup some of Trump's gains in Florida, or not in Florida, but in the major cities of Florida, it is theoretically possible that Florida could be close. I don't really see anything other than a Trump win, but I think there's a possibility where Harris could do well enough to bring it within a point or two, and maybe that's enough to flip the Senate race there, because Rick Scott is a very unpopular sitting senator. Montana, I'm not going to really touch upon a ton, because another state where it's going to take a while to count votes because Montana is really rural. A lot of people vote by mail. And it seems like Tim Sheehy, the Republican, is finally going to get John Tester simply because John Tester, great political candidate, has survived probably two cycles more than he should have. But in the end, Montana is just too red of a state to have a real Democratic senator. And so if John Tester survives, it will be a miracle of political miracles. Last Senate race I'm going to look at here is Ohio. It's going to be an interesting one. Ohio will not be competitive on the presidential level. But the Republicans, for the second consecutive cycle after nominating J.D. Vance and getting away with it last cycle, nominated the most extreme of their primary candidates in Bernie Moreno. And he's running against a very popular senator in Sherrod Brown, who's an economic populist. And so Sherrod Brown's going to do a lot better than the top of the ticket and Harris is going to do in the working class counties, in the Youngstown area, in Metro Cleveland, in Cuyahoga County. And so there is a distinct possibility where we could see a ticket split of 10% where Trump wins Ohio by 9 points, but Sherrod Brown squeezed across the finish line. We saw it in 2022. It didn't change the ending results, but there was a 15-point margin between what Governor Mike DeWine did and what J.D. Vance did. If that sort of margin happens again, Sherrod Brown could squeak across, and if Sherrod Brown holds his seat, then all it takes is the Democrats flipping either Florida, Texas, or Don Osborne causing some chaos in Nebraska, and the Democrats could theoretically get themselves to 50 Senate seats in a cycle in which they weren't supposed to have any chance to do it. All right, so I've talked a lot about what you're not going to be able to know on election night. But now I'm going to tell you places to look where you'll get kind of leading indicators. Places that are representative of certain demographics, certain trends across the country. Where you can say, all right, I'm seeing this here compared to 2020. So maybe I can extrapolate that and assume that it'll hold something similar in similar places across the country. One of those places is Hamilton County, Indiana. That's outside of Indianapolis. It was a place that Donald Trump barely won in 2020. It's a place that's moving left rapidly. And if Kamala Harris wants the sort of suburban results she's going to need to win the presidency, she needs to win that county outright. It is in Indiana, so it will be one of the first counties, really the first suburban county to report. So that's probably the first place to keep your eye on. Then I look at the Ohio 9th Congressional District. It's Marcy Kaptur's district. It's up there in northwest Ohio. What it has for it is it's a very working class district, but it's a place where Democrats have actually stemmed the Republican tide and actually started making some inroads in 2022 back in the other direction. If we see Marcy Kaptur in a lot of trouble early on election night, it's a sign that Trump is doing a really good job of getting out those working class voters for the GOP. It's an indication that Trump's on his way to a victory. If Marcy Kaptur's ahead comfortably like she was in 2022, it might be a sign that Harris has stemmed that tide a little bit. And then you start thinking about, okay, well, maybe Trump doesn't have the votes necessarily in the rural areas of Wisconsin or Michigan. Then we'll look at Norfolk, Virginia, because it's a really good example of what the educated, white, kind of high to middle income voting population is looking like. It's a very well-educated area, got a lot of military veterans, very well-educated, very affluent, and it's a place that has swung kind of consistently with the country, voted for Trump in 2016, Biden in 2020, flipped from a Democratic congresswoman to a Republican in 2022. And so it's a place that not just on the congressional level, but on the presidential level will be very indicative of the kind of educated places that maybe won't necessarily decide the presidency, but could very well decide control of the House of Representatives in places like the Hudson River Valley or the suburbs of California. Last thing, I'll talk about what could hold up results. We mentioned California and the suburbs. It is very, very likely, especially with the models on most election prediction sites showing the House within a half dozen seats, that California could end up deciding the House. And the thing about California House races is that they take forever to be called because California takes forever to count its votes. There is a real situation that is definitely possible and in all likelihood could be likely that we are waiting for days, if not a week plus, on a couple of House races in California to determine which party has control of the House of Representatives. And so, I hate to say it, but there is a real chance we have a redux of 2020 and that we are waiting for days to find out what the future of American democracy holds. One thing that I do know is that it is going to be a very exciting election night. And one thing I do know is just stay calm. Just try and stay calm. I know it's going to be chaotic, but don't overreact to one county. Don't overreact to one thing, because you never know if something was typed in wrong, if something was misplaced, or if there's one trend that's just weird for some reason. You never know. Try to stay calm. Try to do your best to really look at accurate sources. Look at local reporters for their state. Don't focus as much on the national news. And in the end, just know that I'll be here to give you the best information I can throughout the entire election process. Until then, stay safe, Americans.